Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City 90.7 FM. It's time now for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
This is the last weekend before voters go to the polls in Salisbury in an election that could alter the course of local government, and Council District 1 is no exception. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. In February's primary election, incumbent Janie Shields received the most votes, registering around 70. But she is faced by two challengers in the general election, not just one. That is because Cynthia Polk and April Jackson tied with 53 votes apiece. Now, in studio at the moment is Janie Shields, the incumbent, and we are, of course, waiting for Cynthia Polk as well as April Jackson, who we've also invited here this morning. Just a reminder, by the way, that District 1 was carved out as a majority-minority district for the African-American community on the west side. Since then, by the way, the minority community has actually soared to 44% of the city population. So welcome, Shani. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Well, let me ask you this. One of the things that struck me, and I guess it struck a lot of people, is there weren't a lot of votes there. There were a couple of hundred votes, I guess, that everybody garnered in the first district. Why do you think there was such a low voter turnout?
I think one of the problems I've seen over the years is the timing of the when to vote in April. And I think the council, we have decided to move it to November. And I think one of the things is education. I think why it's important to vote for in your local politics. You know, we tend to come out for the governor and the president, but we tend not to view local politics as important. And that's, to me, is one of the very most important political places that you should vote, because there are people right in your hometown, and you want to make sure people are representing you and your interests. And a lot of young people do not vote. They vote for the president, or and they may vote for the governor, but a lot of young people does not vote. And I guess I got involved in politics when my family was, and I think we tend to not bring our children up to the importance of being civic oriented, because people have other problems nowadays than back in the day.
Sure. Well, let me ask you this. Let's just turn to the jobs here and the business community, because one of the things that we've got is a situation where we have certainly an unemployment rate that's about 8.8%. That's something that we've been trying to get down for a while, and of course that's about a percentage point, I think, above. What can be done to attract business?
I think, first of all, I think the political climate should be right. I think we have a beautiful town as far as raising children. As you know, we've gotten 100 best cities to raise our kids. I think public safety, I think we are down 40% with the crime rate, especially the violent crimes. I think we should make it easier to do business in the city of Salisbury. I don't see companies like Campbell Soups and the Dressers coming back. I think the smaller technological businesses will be coming, similar to K&L Microwave, large microwave. They're small businesses, not as big as Dressers, but I think that's the type of business we should draw, the new cyberspace type technology. However, we also have to make sure we have the skilled labor here to attract businesses. If our kids and the young, even old, who has to be retrained, are not trained into these new jobs, that'll be hard to even fill. So that's another place that employers or business developers will look at. Do we have the skilled labor to do what they want to do? We even have Harvard. I take that back. We have Harvard. I think they changed their name by the Civic Center. Those are the type of business I think that we're going to attract and should attract.
And we are now joined by...
Yes, Cynthia Polk.
Cynthia Polk, that's right. First of all, I want to ask you the same question I initially asked Shani here, which is that there was such a low voter turnout. I mean, there was maybe a couple of hundred, I think, all turned out in the first district. Why do you think that there was such a low voter turnout?
Well, personally, I feel that because there was no primary for the mayor, than a lot of people, just like for his presidential elections. They don't understand that everything is important. It all matters. But I think it's going to be a lot different for the general. You know, because I talk to a lot of people and they say, oh, well, I'll vote in the general. I'm like, well, if you really want to support your candidate, then they have to get through to the general. But I think we could do workshops to educate our public that everything, all the, you know, whether it's primary or the general, it is important. But I that's one of the primary things that I think.
We've been talking to hear a bit about the attracting business. As I noticed earlier, that Wicomico County has an unemployment rate of about 8.8%, which is a bit above of the national average. What kinds of things do you think need to be done in order to attract more businesses to the community?
Well, I think again. Informing the public about the Enterprise Zone, because the more I read about the Enterprise Zone, it's really not that far-reaching. If, like a local church that could collaborate with, because it looks like with just a minimum of $50,000 and like three employees, and these employees, their credits even to get these employees. So I think it would be good for the city to have more workshops to empower the people that are just here, making them aware that that this here is in place. And which you got minority loans, which I mean minorities is of course. You know, there's not just African Americans, but you have a lot of other ethnicities here that, so that's one of the things. And the second is, I think a lot of money could be spent. When I say a lot of money, I'm like about $100,000. I think if about $100,000 was spent advertising the destination, Salisbury as a destination. I know Lewis has captured a lot of funds through that because just because of location and of Ocean City, and like 100,000 cars go by less than 5 miles from here a weekend, and just think of just capturing 10% of that. So that would be $100,000 well spent. You know, just get somebody that's really advancing web media, and also to collaborate with the Ocean City Chamber of Commerce. Which not say that that would be maybe the easiest thing, but it's possible. It's all about marketing.
Well, let me ask you about something, because it actually came up in some of the interviews that we did with the mayoral candidates, and that is how business-friendly is Salisbury. Now, as I understand it, and you can correct me, but I understand that you had some difficulty. You have your own business, but had difficulties. I think the local paper described it as sort of the runaround in opening your own business. Explain what happened, and is there a problem with the local government trying to, you know, being friendly or being user-friendly perhaps for business?
Well, I think user-friendly is the word. What personally looks like to me is what you have in place hasn't really been updated since of the world of the internet. And, you know, so we know now that we can buy anything, just pull out our credit card and, you know, I want this, I want. So, you know, with the same business implant, because it's like five different buildings that you, well, actually it's four buildings, but one building you have to go to twice. And, I mean, it's not like that people won't do it, but the easier that you make anything, that because just changing that alone would mean that someone that's looking at a building, let's say on the Western Shore or Nevada or anywhere, and say, you know, I would like to, you know, I would like to do a hub there, you know, you know. And so if you have that online, then they can make a call, even do it online. Or I had used the example of just even selling a CD about this business plan, about, and you just activate it, just push your CD in. That way it could be a part of college's syllabus. So that's another moneymaker.
Let me turn to Shani, because Shani, this is an issue that's come up, and we hear from businesses folks all the time. Some of them tell me that they really have a tough time, and that's probably being kind in some ways. But what they tell me, what about this the reality of dealing with the city bureaucracy, and in addition, what the impact of that image that the city might have?
It's a terrible image that we have gotten ourselves into. And I have to use the fire station. We talk about downtown, and I think the old fire station was an excellent example that could have been redeveloped into apartments, which would have been a tax base, and they were partnering with the University of Maryland Eastern Shore. And rumors got out with the law organization that it was something going to take away from them. And I think it was a hospitality training that they were going to be offering. And if I was a person who owned a restaurant and I had access to sending my employees to training to teach them good customer service and hospitality, I would welcome that. And I think, again, as I've said over and over again, if you don't bring the stakeholders to the table and iron out misinformation and get some level of understanding what the project was going to be about, and the developer had a wonderful reputation of developing property downtown, such as the old Woolworth building. He's getting ready to do the Fellman Brothers building. And this would have been a beginning to bring things downtown. But when you have suspicions, we can't do this, and just saying no to projects, I think that hurts us a lot, because you don't want the project, so it's just not going to happen. And I think... As the mayor said, these last 2 years has been very trying, because we've had projects wanting to come to town, but they've had to go through so much political, not just the paperwork going into getting their permits and permits and public works agreements and things like that. They've had a tough time dealing with the political council, and I think it's awful for them to have to do that, just like the BRICS, misunderstanding about that. 15 years, that $1.4 million loan that we have told people to apply for would have been forgiven. It would have been transitional housing for people that wanted to purchase homes, but their credit might not have been just right at the moment. But you could have worked with Habitat to become homeowners, and it would have been a way to build up Church Street, similar to what we did on Rose Street many years ago. The Parkside School built homes, and we moved them on Rose Street, and it's made that street in the city of Rose Street a nice neighborhood. So I think the political climate is one of the major problems, because if a developer's coming here, they can go on the internet and see what properties already through the realtors' websites. But if they have to go through so many processes and come before us, we as a council has to be willing to listen and not dictate to developers and make it harder for them to even begin. And the impact fees, too, I think is one of the things which we have done something about that as far as lowering the impact fees.
Well, let me ask you this, because there seems to be two elements to this equation. One is what Cynthia is talking about, which is just the sheer dealing with the city government itself in terms of just the process. So let's separate that out from the council. We'll get to the council in a moment. Do you think there's a problem with just the way the city and its bureaucracy, its way it deals with business? Do you think that's a problem?
I think it's getting better. Mm-hmm. I think what you have to do, you have to be willing to change the process. And I think one of the things with the public works, I think one of the concerns in which I did agree with, when someone's coming to town, like public service agreement. We need to, the council should be aware, and we should be able to see the agreement, because the problem we had on Olin Bateman Road, we never saw that particular agreement. That was before our time. But I think we're learning from our mistakes, and we're streamlining, and we have a wonderful IT director, and he spoke last night at a meeting and talking about how we're going to improve our website, how we're going to do things, put things on the website, and get us ready for, should have been ready for 21st century, but we weren't quite there. So he's working on making things easier, making it easier for the user-friendly for to get on the website, for business to look, people who may want to come to Salisbury. He's redesigned the whole website, and I think we're working at it. It might not be completely fixed, but I think we're going the right way.
Something I want to turn to you, guys. Because there do seem to be two elements. One is what the kinds of issues that you're talking about in terms of dealing just with the mechanics, right? But then there's also this reputation the city has begun to develop, rightly or wrongly, that much of the problem, at least, lies with the council and the disagreements over whether or not one should go forward with this project or that project. How important is that element, do you think, in terms of attracting business? And do you think that that's a problem? Do you think the council's been a problem?
Well, there's a saying, the proof is in pudding. So, I mean, if you're not exactly where you want to be, but whatever, then go back and see what needs to be fixed. I don't want to point no fingers, because anytime humans get together, everybody brings their own mind, at least they should. And so then that's going to be some agreements and then some disagreements. So, you know, if we're not where we want to be, then assess the reasons why we think we are not there and work on those, you know, those issues one at a time. You know, I've just heard so many other councils. I don't, just on the outside looking in, it doesn't seem to me to be that much discord than it was before the other. It seems to be a little bit more political. Like, I mean, like Forrest newsworthy, you know, now. But, you know, when you look at this and you look at, you know, federal, you know, government just seems to be a place where everybody wants what they want and they want it now. And that's why I was saying, and you know, it makes sense, but anyone come in new, maybe the ones that's already there, should have to go to workshops like certain companies have, like EAP programs, like so you will know basically not what's just best for you, but what's best for your, because your council now is your new family, and you signed up. You know, your the family you're born with, you wake up and then there they are, but you signed up for this family. And so each one has a responsibility to try to keep it harmonious as possible, but keep in mind that you signed up also to bring your constituents issues. So you got two things, and the more harmonious you are, the more likely you are to be able to get some of these issues, because there's less time bickering.
Well, I was going to ask you, because one of the things that seems to me is that the council itself is deeply divided, not just in terms of personalities, but in terms of how they view how the city should function. I mean, there are serious differences, just as indeed on the national level we find the same thing.
Right.
There are serious differences that just seem to create a certain amount of gridlock. Shani, and then we'll go back to you.
I want to say this. We do have workshops with the Maryland Municipal League. I've finished the academy through the University of Maryland College Park that they offer every summer. So anyone who's elected, they have the opportunity to go to these workshops, talk about Open Meetings Act, ethics, all kinds of different workshops. One of the things is when you hear people, I'm not pointing the fingers, but when you hear go to a council when they say we're not a social service agency, we have enough affordable housing, we want to move them out. Move them where? They don't want them in the city. I have a problem with that, because when people are hurting, they come to their local government. You hear people say, well, what are you going to do about the homeless? That is a concern. And when you're not concerned about it, that bothers me. You have these empty buildings. How come you can't fix a building up for the homeless? So you have to explain to them that you, to me, a city government should partner with an agency to maybe alleviate some of this problem. But when you have a council that feels no hurt or pain that other people are going through, I have a problem. I'd seriously say I have a problem that senior citizens have problems. The young parents, the children, college students, they all have problems. So maybe they don't know that we're not the Department of Social Service. But one of the things, they know we're downtown, and they come in the office and ask certain issues. I don't believe in turning your back on people. I believe you should at least send them to a place where they can get the help that they're asking for. The perfect example, like I said again, was the BRICS. Yes, frightened. I'd rather see that money come to our community than it's $1.4 million to go for the same project in Baltimore or New York City or somewhere like that. They talk about the fire boat. We had our employees working in a homemade fire boat. Would you rather for them to have a homemade fire boat and something happened to them, or it wouldn't be adequate to fight a fire, than just getting some of the people's tax dollars, because it can only be purchased for a fire boat? No employees, no nothing. So I'm just saying, when you have that kind of misinformation and things, that's what makes the political climate putting fear tactics in it.
Let me just briefly, because I want to get back to Cindy, is that is there just simply a fundamental difference between what some people in the council, perhaps a majority, how they think the city should function, and as opposed to, say, yourself? And if so, what in a nutshell is that difference? Why is it that there's this difference?
They came with their personal agendas, I think. When you come with your personal agendas and can't see the other side of the coin.
In what sense? Personal agenda?
I think one of the things, the first thing that happened was the 4-2.
Right.
The 4-2. You're in a college town. This is a college town. And I'll never forget the story where these three men fought in Iraq. And they came and wanted me to go to Salisbury University. They fought for their country, and they found this three-bedroom home. And because they were unrelated, they were put out of their home. So when you pass, when you're not sensitive to people and the plight of people, it concerns me. When you had a veterans home in my district where the neighbors didn't have a problem with veterans, to give them coming back from Iraq who needed mental health counseling or a way to be re-enter into society, to get a place to stay because some of them were homeless. When you turn your back on those kind of things because you're worried that it's going to come in your neighborhood, I have a problem with that. And I'm more social oriented, I guess. That's the difference in me. I love Camden neighborhoods. Mm. I love Newtown because my family grew up in Newtown, some of my family. But I think that we have to look at everybody's concerns.
I want to get back to Cynthia. What about when you look at the city council? It seems to me that there is, I mean, in many ways, there are just a different view as to how the city should function. And let's talk about the BRICS for a moment, because that was brought up, and it's sort of become the symbol in which the council majority said it was feared that the city would be on the hook for money and so on. And it was not the way, and they wasn't particularly kind about what kinds of the development that it would be in, which would be basically some kind of transitional affordable housing. Do you think that there's that fundamental difference? And if so, what do you think about that? Is it symbolized by the BRICS? I mean, was that a deal we should have gone ahead with? I mean, if the BRICS proposal was put before you today, would you vote for it?
Okay. Now,
go ahead.
Okay. I wouldn't just kill it, and I certainly wouldn't just sign off on it. But because the city is a business, and this business is representing the taxpayer dollars. Now, if we have an effective people in place, then we could do this social piece, and we could market this social piece. Now, what I'm saying is, out there, now there are so many ways that government find ways to get money. You know, I know, like after 9/11, there was a lot of money pulled out of daycare. But this is a federal issue, but this is a domino effect because everything's connected. But a lot of money was pulled out of daycares, and this happened all around the country. And a lot of money was pulled out of for all kinds of social assistance. You know, they're not sending this to the state, so the state's not going to send it to the county and the city. Okay. But let's say about this here, how do we have this building and find ways that it won't be a burden on the taxpayer? And so that's what I am saying. I'm not saying that the city should just have a open pocket, but that's where a good council and a good, you know, authoritarian force, the mayor, whoever's the mayor, should know how to do those two things. Now, you can be as social as you want and you can be as kind as you want, but when it comes to making this And I don't know why that couldn't have been done to not let that been a burden. Yes, you got to acknowledge that you know if this is a burden, how not to be. And one way how not to be, because there's federal money out there. It's just been switched. You know, it's been taken out of daycares and it's been put in what you call Homeland Security, which means. There's a lot of initiatives that are around it. So I'm saying that, you know, if the council had gotten together and found some money, found money that would not have been on the burden of the city, because that money is found when, when they want it. So just keep it, help people, but also, yes, you do have to keep in mind you got to stay in the black.
Right. I recognize, by the way, that the people who, by the way, who the council majority thought somehow that this would wind up being a burden. But more to the question, what would you do with a piece of property like the Bricks or Linens of the Week, which is another one of these controversies? And there are a number of other, you know, that's property that the city wound up getting, and now it has to figure out what to do. Some people have suggested just simply sell it off. What would you do? What mechanism would you?
I mean, like if I was like on the council and I was in decision making policy, what I would suggest with the group is that. Do we have any, because this don't have to be all federal money. This could be 50-50, private business, because they would be getting certain breaks. And so it's not just one shoe fits all.
Would you try to sell these? Would you just simply try to sell these off? I mean, one person I remember talking to suggested they just tear down something like the Bricks and sell it off.
Well, one thing about it is once you tear it down, you don't incur so much expenses with all of that. You know, so I don't even think if you sell it once you tear it down, I don't think you really help. Mm-hmm. You've got a different kind of burden. Plus, you're not empowering anyone. So you've got that same debt. And so at least with putting it, you know, housing, it's a win. You know, maybe it's a win-lose, but if you tear it down, you got a lose-lose. Nobody's benefits.
May I?
Yeah, go ahead.
First of all, one of my co-councils want commercial. What the idea we had, the previous council, under Louise Smith's guidance, we wanted to partner with Habitat. We had to make sure that the soil and everything for housing in a community center. You donate the property to Habitat and Habitat was interested in that, and that's building partnerships mm-hmm. with people. I don't want to see it commercial. I don't support commercial coming there. I don't look for someone coming there to purchase for commercial or business. I look at it for to continue the housings for Habitat. Also, the Bricks, we partnered. The previous mayor partnered with Home Americas, who was the manager of the Bricks facility, which is known around the country of doing good home management. They applied for the previous council under Louis Smith. We supported them going out after this money. When they received the $75,000 grant, that we the council told them to apply for, the past council and the present council told them to apply for, then all of a sudden once they got that grant, we wouldn't agree to accept it. So when we didn't agree to accept the $75,000, they lost the $1.4 million that they could have gotten. And it wasn't coming out of the Salisbury tax surplus. It wasn't coming out of the city's money. This was grant, the $1.4 million was money that would have been forgiven after 15 years, long as we kept it affordable housing. And you know, time is flying by. 15 years could came and go, and the loan would have been free and clear. You wouldn't have to pay it back or anything. So that when you build partnerships was, I don't think we should have been in managing affordable housing. But I thought, because we already have one on Mitchell, by Mitchell, Mr. Landing, that Mayor Paul Martin got. But I think we should partner with agencies or companies that are in the expert in doing these things. We should partner with Habitat. We should partner with Home of Americas or whoever else comes that wants to do this. And when we don't do this, and other towns don't do this, I read National League of Cities. You see other towns even buying, purchasing blighted blocks and rebuilding them. And when we turn our back on ideas to make our city better, that's what I have a problem with. And a lot, these projects was making our city better, making neighborhoods that are blighted to build them up. Now, the Bricks is a historical building. I remember that as a little girl. It's a beautiful building. And naturally, each apartment costs a little more because when you do historical buildings, you have to do certain things that you couldn't do for a regular building. So naturally, that would have cost a little more. And it was for workforce people. It was workforce housing. It wasn't a project. It was workforce housing for like a mother and a child or husband, wife, whatever. But it was a beautiful project, and it was laid out nice. And it just was sad that we didn't go forth with that.
Let me turn to rental housing. I saw one stat. I guess it was 72% of the housing stock is rental, and it's of some 11,400 occupied homes. National rate is like about maybe 34%. And Shaney alluded to a moment ago about the 4-2 legislation that was then expanded to 4-3. So let me turn to you, Cynthia. Do you support the 4-2 legislation? Did you support that concept of not allowing more than say two or maybe even three unrelated people in a rental?
Well, no, I wouldn't. People have they make decisions according to their core belief, and I'm a family oriented person, and not just family, because the family in my history may mean my grandparents and my aunts. So I wouldn't just make a law saying that because of the core of who I am. Now, I mean, even if it was a good idea, I couldn't. There are certain things that you can't buy into. There are certain things she can't buy. So, no, I would not been for that. Because I believe when you just make something a slate like that, that's just like those three, VA, that, mm-hmm. Fell in the middle. So when you make something like that, a slate like that, and it also runs the risk of that getting out there and giving your whole city a name as not progressive, set, old, stuck in your ways. So not to say that you want to have your community, just taken over, but 4-2, I wouldn't vote for a 4-2.
Okay, and let me pursue this a little further with you, and that is that the mayor has some legislative proposals about rentals, including conforming use. In essence, in part, it would be rolling back some of the single family homes that are now being used as rentals, as well as obviously there's the three strikes in terms of police being called out. Cindy, would you support either of those, the idea of maybe rolling back some of these? Because the central question I think that the mayor has, agree with him or not, is how do you deal with what he sees as sort of a growing rental issue? And when he sees rentals, particularly single homes rented out, he thinks that they don't necessarily, A, conform obviously to the surrounding area of intent, but also, B, that's not necessarily a good thing. What would you do? Would you try to curb rentals? And if so, would you agree to something like the conforming use?
Well, as far as that 4-3 strikes, mm-hmm. Again, to me, what I would suggest is go back to the drawing board, and when you put something out there, it comes back to haunt you, especially for as a business. If you're trying to draw business and expand your business base, and you got certain things in your policy that these, you know, this business can invest $1 million in a business, and then situations happen, and now your doors are locked. So the thing of it is when someone would be considering a city that has that and a city that don't, any good business person would pick the one that, you know, I mean, there would be other variables, mm-hmm. but that to me is personally, I feel like that would be like a business killer.
Okay. Let me turn to Shani for a moment because.
Well, this is where the mayor and I disagree.
Right. And let me put the question here in sort of another way, though. Mm-hmm. And that is, okay, so if one, say, doesn't agree with the conforming provision or and some of the efforts of 4-2 and 4-3, right? So if you don't agree with those, are you concerned about the expansion of rentals, this large rental stock that we got 70%, a lot of, matter of fact, somebody told me the other day that I think one of the other local cities was complaining about how its housing stock had 50% of rentals. Well, we're like 20% above. Is there some, are you concerned about the fact that their large stock is 70%?
I'm not really concerned because today's economics, mm-hmm. You have, it's such as me, I lost my home, I became a renter. And you have a lot of foreclosures in our community. So when you have larger foreclosures, one of the things is you're going to have a growing rental because you're going to rent. Or they're going to move in with their friends or family. We, in the neighborhood that Cynthia and I live in, we have people that may live in what we call rooming houses that were once single-family homes because some people may not be able to afford to maintain a house like electric, gas, water bills, things like that. They're not making the money. They may have other bills they have to pay, like child support, like especially single men. They may have to pay child support and they owe taxes or something. There's a reason, there's a need for all kinds of different types of housing. You also have to realize you have different ethnics coming in that all live together, but they may not be related. And my question, where were you going to go in there and ask for the birth certificates or something to see if they were related? How are you going to enforce this? And back in the day, when people lived down in Nanticoke area, a lot of them came into Salisbury and lived with people so they could go to high school or go to college or go somewhere because it was so far away. So when you want to turn down housing and a house across the street from me on Germania Circle, they closed the lady's house down. And she had two apartments, one upstairs, one downstairs. It's a huge house. She could not, I watched that house has set empty, now going on 3 years. And she has to pay city taxes, but they won't allow her to rent. Now, they allow her to rent one part of it. And I suggest that to her, rent the bottom part. But the upstairs part, you know, they wanted to make it one big house. Some people cannot afford a great big giant home. So I think we need to look at other avenues. I don't agree with, I think houses already existing that already has like two apartments or three apartments. Let them be that. I don't think any more should be converted. Mm-hmm. But the ones that already converted, let them stay that way. And make sure they are not substandard conversions, you know, or attic apartments, or unless it's a big room, you know, right. Tall, like there's like a loft apartment or something. But make sure that housing that we do have, which I found out that only 5% of our housing is substandard in the city of Salisbury. That's something to be said, and I think it's something to be said with the Neighborhood Housing Service. 95%. But we've always had renters. I know a lady in my church was 96 years old. When she died, I did not realize she didn't own her home. But she did not want to live anywhere else but that house. And she lived there from the time she was married. Her and her husband came there. They didn't even want their landlord to come in. They fixed the place. But I always thought that she owned her property. There's a lot of situations like that, especially in the senior citizen community, wherein they want to stay in their home and rent. And just like we have a growing retirement community, a lot of people are selling their homes and renting. That is, you have to look at the senior citizen component of it. We have several senior citizen apartment complexes where people have sold their homes and moved into these because they don't want to maintain the house. So that's another reason for maybe a growing rental situation in Salisbury, because they count the apartments also, I believe.
Cynthia, yes.
Yeah, what I want to add to that is, yeah, because, I mean, after the, we're still in the recession, okay, because when the average person makes less now than they made in the early 90s, okay, and with everything else going up. But I think one of the reasons for that high apartments is because you had a lot of complexes come in, which is more favorable because with utilities, it costs a lot less to rent an apartment for utilities because they're all there together. So when you have a down in your economy, you know, people are going to see, well, this is how much money I'm dealing with, so I have to make all these things happen. So that's going to make someone choose a house. I've watched people sell their homes, even at a loss, didn't lose it, and move into apartment. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, why did you do that? Because it wasn't economically feasible to keep that all that space and all that space, all that worry, all those utilities, when I can just have life simple. And plus, when your children leave, you don't need. The whole homeowner thing is like an image. And some people buy into it, but a lot of the younger people don't, because with that tax break, by the time you look at it, you know, maybe you get $400 or $500 more on your taxes, but this is an every month thing. So there's a lot of, I would not say a city is not working because they got more apartments or more rentals, because now if these apartments and these rental are, you know, quality, you know, to me, personally, with today's economy, with everything going out of the country, and you know, like all the good paying jobs going out of the country, I mean, people are going to have to survive, and how other than rent versus all of the high taxes. And our taxes is a lot even higher than Alexandria, Virginia, and look at the income there.
Let me just turn to briefly to downtown revitalization. I mean, the mayor has obviously offered up his own proposal. His challenger, Joe Albaro, has offered up other proposals, turning it into an entertainment district. And let me start with Cynthia first. What would you do to revitalize downtown? We've been struggling with this for a long time. What would you do?
Well, I want to go back again to we got at least 100,000 going by Salisbury during the summer, every week. Okay, during the summer. Okay, so how do you pull them in? You've got so many restaurants here with different ethnicities to find a way to entice them in to have a like what you call an international fest. But then you got to spend a lot of money telling everybody about, you can go here all in this one building to get all these different kinds of different foods. But then you got to spend a lot of money advertising that, because it's like that old saying, build it and they will come. I mean, how many times have you went way out of your way to get a cup of, just one cup of coffee. So if you have something here right in the middle downtown that is got 15 different kinds of food, I'm talking about ethnic, you know, when you got your soul foods, you got your you got your Cajun, and then advertise that. Once they get in the habit, because we all like a creature of habit.
Right. So you see this. You're looking at the downtown as more of a destination, as a sort of an entertainment.
If you can create it as a destination, you got something.
Okay. Let me turn to Shani, because we're running out of time. What's your sense about what? I mean, you've struggled with him. You've been on the council for a couple of terms, and I'm sure you've been watching this. What's the answer? Is there an answer to
revitalization?
Yeah,
first of all, the downtown was really destroyed when they put Route 50 through. Because what happened when they put Route 50 through, people bypassed to go to Ocean City. They thought Ocean City's traffic was going to stop in downtown, but what they did, they found a way to just zoom through and pass by Salisbury. What I like to see happen, and this was one of my visions, I like to see City Hall downtown. I think we want to support and build up downtown. Maybe City Hall should be right downtown in the center of the plaza. And the perfect building was the First National Bank building, and it could venture out into the Old House Apparel building. I think I do agree that we need to have inclusive things, not high-end products, not all high-end products. Something that people can afford, like people walk to the courtroom, and I do see the hot dog gentleman down. Mm-hmm. Downtown, we have the deli downtown, but some people may not be able to afford the deli, but simple hot dog. I like to see a restaurant like she was saying, like Dayton's or mm-hmm. Sage's or those kind of restaurants that people would come to downtown. You can't even get you can't even get a bottle of aspirin downtown. I'd like to see a store like that.
How do you bring them here? Right,
you can't order them here,
right?
Yeah, you know, I go to McDonald's all the time.
$64,000 question,
right? Now, I had to sit and talk with a guy from McDonald's, and I said, why don't you bring a little small McDonald's like to do it to the mall? And one of the things they market when a person wants to open a business, something similar to McDonald's, that was a learning experience for me, they want to see how much money they can make even prior to being interested in coming. So if we have no traffic now coming downtown, so the hub businesses, stores like I'm talking about, why would they come downtown if there's nobody coming to purchase their products? I think even a Dollar Tree or hair product store, all different kinds of stores
and
like that.
And how would is it some kind of government incentives?
We have the revolving loan program at the city. We have a revolving loan at the city, and that would be a small business coming downtown. It's something everybody uses, hair products.
Yeah.
They did have hair product store years ago at the old Watson Smokehouse building, and I think she got sick and had closed up. And then we've had beauty salons, but we need also get what everybody needs downtown. I want to see a jazz club downtown. Because there's a craving for jazz, because when the Chipman Culture Center has their jazz shows, it's sold out all the time. So I can agree with Mr. O'Barrell's point, mm-hmm. make it somewhat entertaining, but also I think that we also need to bring useful things that people can use and be inclusive to everybody in the town.
And in terms of the downtown, one of the big issues is the parking lots. Because my understanding is, and I remind people, there used to actually be buildings on those parking
That's
lots.
Right.
Let me turn to you, Cynthia, real quick. Do you think those parking lots should be sold? What do you think they should be doing with those?
Well, I don't have enough, I don't have enough information about that. I don't know what the square footage that mm-hmm. they're worth.
Do you think they should be preserved?
Well,
everybody's been downtown, I was reminded. I always tell this: if you overlay the center at Salisbury over downtown, you will find that you walk further distances in the center of mall than you do in downtown. And yet, mm-hmm. if you walk around downtown, it looks like Marketplace is like forever away from you. So dealing with those parking lots, would you try to keep them or?
Well, here's another thing: is getting back to about mm-hmm. how they, how Salisbury still, permits and all of that is mm-hmm. they're doing what they did like 20 years ago. So, I love that parking lot, but I don't know if it's a good financial piece
to keep it
at this point of time. I mean, you know, that was fine when you had like seven businesses that were that had payrolls of like I know Dresser had a, like a $7 million payroll a year. So if you had like, let's say five of those, and so you, maybe you can afford to keep your downtown, but now you don't have them. So, you know, I really, I don't know what the numbers are. And so you do have to make changes according to your situation. I mean, you know, I mean, that's just, now that's something about business is like, well, if you're not in the black, then you got to, you gotta go back to the drawing board.
Let me turn to Shaney real quick on the parking lots. Sell them.
I would sell
keep them.
Them. I would sell them. I would sell them because the parking lot. I hate to do that to them, but the flea market. You know where the flea market is.
Oh yeah, sure.
That's
right.
A perfect example. I look at it. I was down there yesterday. I had to go downtown, believe it or not, for some business, and the parking lot's empty. The parking lot's no cars there. No cars are parking there during the week. Very few cars are parked there during the week. So why are we holding on to that particular parking lot? I would sell that parking lot if a developer wanted to come and bring a hotel, a restaurant, a multi-use building. Yes, I would sell it in a minute. I'd vote to sell that particular parking lot.
Let me just briefly turn to crime. I guess the crime rate, for at least for certain crimes, down by some 40%, 21% over the last 10 years. We've had the Safe Streets Initiative. But at the same time, I was running around. I was actually, when I was looking around, both of you seem to express concern about just simply locking people up. That I think, I don't know, the police state, I think, was or something to that effect was being used. I don't know if it was you, Shaney, or Cynthia. But anyway, what about... did you say that? Okay. So what about it? Are you satisfied with the direction of the policing in the city and how we're dealing with crime?
I think we're doing... our police chief is a great police chief. I think that was one that... most important, one of the most important decisions we made as far as employment that the council agreed on was hiring Chief Duncan. However, the problem I see in the justice system as a whole is the inequality of sentencing. When you have the same crime done by a person of Caucasian persuasion and an African-American does the same crime, the African-American get more time than the Caucasian. You have people with drugs on them, might get 12 months, and if our boys get caught with drugs, they get 20 years. So that's a concern that I have with the justice system as a whole. But I think we as citizens, as far as crime, we should make sure as they lock our doors, look out for one another in the community. If you know someone's going out of town, that's what they used to do years ago. Be a good neighbor and watch the house. If you see someone going around the house, make sure that when you go away, your mail is picked up. Little simple things that you can protect and lock your car doors. It seems to me the police said one of the things is people not locking their car doors and the cars getting broken into. Little basic things could bring down your crime. Educate your girls and boys that they should walk in groups, not one down the street. Now, it upsets me when I see a little child running like in McDonald's or by herself. The parents would be ordering stuff and the children be running around. I was worried about somebody snatching that child up and taking him. But you got to protect yourself along with the police because that helps the police department.
Are you satisfied? Do you think the Safe Streets Initiative has contributed to bringing down the crime rate?
I think somewhat. Yeah. I think somewhat, but we also need to educate our community about how to prevent crime.
Cynthia, what about you? Concern? I mean, in terms of how we're bringing crime down, what's your sense about that?
Well, what I think it looks like is, because I live on the west side, so I see, and then I move about the city, so I see, all different aspects of life. The one thing that I would like to say for is far as crime, it looks like it's better. But on the other hand, when I ride by the hospital, I see other stuff. I see, as far as people going to get the methadone, I see large groups. And the reason why I would see that, because I went to school for addictions. I got a degree. It's a process. And so when I look, I see young people. I don't see people with their teeth, because the methadone and a lot of these programs make these people's teeth fall out, and you can tell when you see this is kind of getting off. But I'm just saying, so when I see a lot of people going cross, going to that methadone spot, because you don't go into the, and I see it, a lot of them are young, teeth not fell out yet. So what I'm saying is, it's not on the street, but it's still a lot of issues going on in this. And see, the more the people are in crisis, the more people are going to make decisions from their lower self, which means their fear-based self, without a lot of good critical thinking. And that's the one thing that I feel that, because I don't think there are good people and bad people. I think we're all combination. And I think we make decisions according to the information that we get. When we get better information, we make better choices. I mean, we can just think about what we did when we were young, like, oh my gosh, I did that. But as you get older, that's not even an option. So I don't just feel like that's me. I feel like that's everybody. So
okay, let me break in here, because I want to also ask about redistricting. A couple of proposals on the table. Five districts with two minority majority. There's a couple of at large. I'll start with you, Cynthia. What kind of redistricting do you favor? Do you favor the two districts, one at large and one is from the district you're running into, or do you prefer five separate districts, or what's your sense about that? Because that's going to be coming up.
Well, I've always, it's like, District 1, the district that I stay in, is basically has been the district with as many issues or more as any in Salisbury. But yet we got one representative. And I think that's too much pressure, because whoever the council person is, it's like it's all on that one person. I don't really think that's fair. There's times that I expressed to you, Shaney, my concern about this, or some other neighbor may. But the thing of it is that's one law, and the district is larger. And yet it's not only that, with the other way it's set, every 2 years you get to get a new person in. So I definitely think we need something.
Some more district, maybe five. I'm going to turn to Shane, because we're out of time here. What about this? What kind of solution? You've had time to look at this.
I support five districts, because you have each neighborhood has its own issues. Church Street, for instance, is almost compatible to the District 1. Mm-hmm. I think you have the north side of Salisbury, with residents who have different concerns. You have the historical neighborhoods. I think it gives a fair look across the board of our city. I don't think one section, we shouldn't have three people from the west side on the council. Mm-hmm. I don't think we should have people from all aspects of the city to represent all of the city. And that's personally how I feel. I supported five districts. Laura and I supported five districts, and they went to two, which I knew they would.
Okay, finally, because there's an incumbent, this generally means that in part this election is a referendum on the incumbent. I mean, that's true of Jim Ireton, who's running for re-election. Debbie Campbell, same thing. Mm-hmm. So first to you, Cynthia, why should people not vote for Shaney Shields? She's incumbent. Why should we change horses, just briefly?
Yeah. Well,
about 30 seconds.
Well, anyone that is satisfied with, the incumbent, I suggest vote for her. But for myself, I care whether our city thrives or dies. And I have new ideas. I am not, you know, I'm sure after 8 years that Eugenie is tired. And and maybe, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. nothing. I mean, after, I'm just saying, well, not just Eugenie, yes, but anybody. But, okay. I mean, because she had the whole District 1 that she was responsible for. So mainly I care whether our community thrives or dies, and I'm going to do everything I can to bring some new ideas in, and I'm going to do it through listening at the youth in the community and our seniors.
Let me go briefly, Shane. You got about 15 seconds. Why should they keep you?
Because we have thrived in District 1. If you look at the businesses that have come already, Dairy Queen, we have a Dunkin' Donuts, we have the Royal Farms is coming. We did a stoplight on Parsons Road, the River's Edge project, which took mm-hmm. 6 or 7 months to get approved, but it's finally got approved by compromising. I want to continue, and I look at myself as not only the District 1 representative, but the total Salisbury.
And we've got to hold it there. You've been listening to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and we will certainly invite April Jackson. Hopefully, maybe she'll make it before the election. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Delmarva Today.
Delmarva Today is a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Don Rush is the host. Cora Mitchell is our volunteer producer. Chris Rank is the executive producer and audio engineer. You can listen to this program again on our website, DelmarvaPublicRadio.net. You can also view our program on PAC-14 television and on demand. Visit PAC-14.org for full details and schedules.